Welcome to the 28th Macro and Volatility Podcast. My name is Eric Bender. I'm joined by our two experts, Michael Purvis, CEO of Talbot and Capital Advisors, a cross-asset macro research firm, and Josh Silva, CIO of Passaic Partners, a derivative specialist and manager of institutional advisory assets. Before we dive into today's topics, we ask that if you like what you hear, please subscribe to the Macro and Volatility Podcast on your podcast platform of choice, Bloomberg and or LinkedIn. And as always, Michael is available to discuss Talbakken's institutional research offering, and Josh is available to discuss Passaic's derivative solutions. All right, let's get into it. Michael, we had a bit of news this weekend. The U.S. and Israel initiated operations Epic Fury and Roaring Lion. What are your thoughts and takeaways over the last 4 days?
So, Eric, yet again, we have an early Saturday morning. Oh, my God, you got to check your phone at 3 a.m. situation, just like with Venezuela a few weeks prior here. And, you know, as I was thinking through the events over the weekend before the markets opened Monday, you know, I went back and I kind of reviewed four big oil-rooted geopolitical shocks. So I went back to the Iraqi invasion of Kuwait back in August of 1990, September 11th, Russia, Ukraine, and then again, more recently, Venezuela. All four of those very different. All four of these have sort of oil as a key sort of theme in various ways through them, all of them distinct from each other as well, but all then certainly distinct from the Iranian situation. But nonetheless, you got to go someplace for context. And so what was interesting there in all four of those scenarios, sort of what was clearly working if you had gotten, was that if you had gotten long crude or crude oil or other hydrocarbons before the events and gold, those worked. If you look at things like what happened to equity markets, currencies, rates, there everything gets a lot more nuanced. So therefore you have to sort of do some thinking about what is the right and relevant scenario for contextualizing these rapidly unfolding events here. And in certain ways, Ukraine is quite relevant because we do have certainly, you know, there was a major oil shock there, not a huge SPX shock back then, right? But you did see a break evens get higher, oil prices obviously much higher, and sort of a condition of sort of stagflation. But it wasn't really a great thing to be, you know, short the stock market at that point. Other scenarios like 9/11 were yes, you know, you'd want to be long the VIX and short the market at that time. And in fact, a lot of crude oil proxies were weaker when the markets did reopen a week later back then there. But what was different about then, it was sort of like a recession case was like just staring you right in the face back after 9/11 here. And what I think we're all trying to sort of sort through today is, are we dealing with some stagflationary dynamics, or are we dealing with like, oh my God, there really is going to be some sort of recession? I'm certainly, in most scenarios that I can envision, really it's more the former case. And then the question is how much and how long? And I think with specifically with respect to oil prices, to my mind, it's there's the vertical element of how high the prices are going to go. And then there's a horizontal element, the x-axis, if you will, of how long oil prices will stay elevated. I think the markets are really trying to sort of come to terms with both of those. My own view right now is that it may be a bit more about the x-axis, and maybe there's a structural component higher in terms of what the cost of oil is going to be there. But Josh, what are your thoughts here?
Well, I mean, it's kind of interesting. I mean, I'm surprised at how tame this movement has been this week. You know, the fundamentals, as you pointed out, are there. But I actually think that they're driving the bus a little bit. But I also think people are kind of growing accustomed to what I refer to as Trump shocks. And so they're not reacting as violently to how they did, let's say, last year at this time. And I think a lot of what's happening right now has actually, like, we have this event that was a shock to the market, but we have sort of a large unwind of what I think is positioning more than anything else. And what I mean by that is, one of the great trades this year was being long semiconductors, being long software, being, that worked very, very well. I mean, everyone likes to point out the SMH and I think it's the IGV as a software and like how well that's gone. Well, that's unwound a little bit today. In fact, it's unwound a decent amount. You also look at non-US equity, things like South Korea, Japan, Europe versus US equity. You've seen big outperformance in those non-US. That's given back quite a bit. I think we've given back 5%. I think non-US represented by MSCI EAFE was outperforming US by 10%, and now it's more like 4.5%. And that happened in 2 days, that move. The dollar, we've seen a big move in the dollar where people were generally short dollar, moving out of dollar assets. The dollar strengthened. The energy trade, I think there's the obviously what we have, which is fundamental, but there was a large, short energy trade on for a very long time, and long precious metals, quite frankly, in the commodity space. And I think that's being unwound as you've seen the move in silver. Over the last few days, I think is more representative of positioning than actual fundamentals, which is a whole nother conversation. And we're all these big trades were working, and everyone was making money. We've seen a significant amount of money taken off the table for in performance. So people are not freaking out, quite frankly, overall about risk because they're still up money. Let's see what happens. Hedging across the board is still pretty expensive. The VIX is still high versus realized, so it's something to keep in mind. The other thing is equity and bond correlations. Bonds are not protecting. I think the move on Monday that surprised me the most was when we opened, the bonds were down, specifically the 30-year, which I expected to be up. We saw quite a bit of call buying in the 30-year bond market on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And I think the fact that they didn't go up was surprising as people also cut the amount of rate cuts that the Fed was going to put in this year, and people became more sort of hawkish, quite frankly, more concerned about inflation than they were about growth. So sort of that AI growth slowdown seems to have suddenly disappeared in less than 36 hours, and now the inflation issue has kicked in, which again is sort of is a big change.
Thanks, Josh. So let's pull on that thread a little bit with regard to volatility. What are you seeing there? Is the market behaving as you expected or not, given the circumstances?
Well, considering what happened, I would expect that, typically in a market like this, a VIX spike closer to 40, maybe 50. If you think about what the VIX did last year, I would have also expected the market to have sold off a lot more than it did over the last 2 days. I also would have expected the bonds to have rallied, none of which have happened. We've seen the VIX actually hold pretty relatively well between that sort of 20 and 25 level during this. And I think a lot of that comes from what you're seeing underneath the sheets. In other words, what's happening with semis and software. So this is almost more of a rotation trade and a reduction of gross versus a reduction of net, where a reduction of net would have a greater impact on the VIX. It's funny, as Michael and I have talked about this a lot offline, is that this decorrelation of equities is actually just keeping so much pressure on the VIX. And so I think, quite frankly, we're going to continue to see this sort of degrossing, which is going to hold the VIX down until it doesn't. And then the question is, does people think fundamentally that the market should sell off? And so the VIX, it's going to be hard for it to go higher while we have positioning the way it does, and we'll go there. And again, if you think about it, single stock vol, I think one of the brokers put out is in sort of the 90th percentile, and index vol is sort of in the 10th percentile to show you the extreme movement of single names or sector names versus index. And so we need that to unwind or to settle down. I mean, we saw that a little bit in 08 with commodities versus financial stocks. I'm not pulling up 08 to sort of be negative, but it's not like this hasn't happened in the past. But typically, when you have such a far stretch, these things do tend to unwind and put pressure on the market. So, I mean, people are just happy reducing risk right now, which is a combination of nets and gross, which is quite frankly holding the VIX where it is.
Good insight. So, from a cross-asset perspective, Michael, how do you see that?
Well, let me get into cross assets in a sec, but just to build on Josh's comments about the correlations, and just to put some numbers on it. So like 1 month implied correlations right now is about 0.17. That's higher than it was a couple of weeks ago, but that is still crazy, crazy low here. And one of the other interesting ratios I like to look at is the VIX relative to implied correlations, right? So if you look at implied correlation divided by VIX, that is just today, that made a new record low. So the VIX is higher, nothing crazy, mid-20s. I think it ticked at 28 this morning there, but relative to correlation. So this is a very, we're still maintaining a low correlation environment there. And Eric, I would argue to you that there's certain dynamics when you have these types of, I know this sounds very counterintuitive, but if you have this type of shock of, oh my God, oil equities might be, I need to be overweight oil equities. I've forgotten about them. I thought they were dead money for the last year. And now I see a sustained bid for crude. And so I need to be overweight that. If you're not in a recession scenario, that kind of dynamic adds even more fuel to this rotation fire Josh was discussing, which by extension suppresses correlations and keeps sort of a headwind on the VIX, right? So I think that's also part of the story here. Now, if we get to a scenario where people want to categorically exit the equity asset class and run for the hills and put all their money into safe havens, that's a different story. Then you'll start seeing that correlation and the VIX, move up to considerably higher. But just for context here, like this 1 month correlation that's at 0.17 right now, it was at 0.55 in April after Liberation Day, and during right after the Russian invasion of Ukraine, which again was not an SPX gets killed scenario, right? It was really more about oil prices being higher and inflation being higher there. Implied correlations got up to even higher at 0.6, right? So it's a very, we're still really, the equity options markets are really sort of grinding through this super low correlation condition that you get in tech-centric bull markets there. I'll zoom out to the cross asset volatility picture for a second here, but it's interesting just to notice that the like a lot of FX vols have simply not moved that much. They're generally higher, right? But like yen vol, surprisingly, is not that much. The yen's not doing much here, right?
Currency markets aren't
I
reacting
mean,
as great as you would expect, even though the dollar's
yeah,
rallied.
you look, you're seeing vol higher in some emerging market currencies, Mexico, for example, Korea, China, and the euro vol. The euro is a very important currency to be watching here because of their relative energy vulnerability here. But also, Treasury vol, the move index of VIX for the Treasury curve, it's higher. It's in like 73-ish, 74-ish
I mean,
area.
owning treasury vol is like the trade of death right now.
It
VIX is terrible.
you get a giant event,
Yeah,
and
nothing happens.
it's just not. And we've talked about this on prior podcasts, right? But it's just not moving a lot here, right? So the one thing that is moving, of course, is oil vol is just enormous here. So oil vol is right now at the same level as Russia, Ukraine, in the immediate aftermath of that there. So that is sort of doing what it's supposed to do. And obviously oil took a second leg higher today. In sort of day market day two of this situation. Gold vol is higher, but it's not crazy high, right? I mean, it did go crazy high for very different reasons in late January and early February. And, when you had that crazy move higher in gold and silver, and then the crash, and then it kind of came back from that. But it's moving higher there. But again, it's not particularly special. Gold vol's been much higher back during the
Yeah.
earlier periods.
Well, thank you, Michael. So, it's a really interesting time for cross asset volatility, and this is really timely, I guess, for kind of the podcast that we're trying to relate to folks. So it's helpful to get that insight. So, you know, taking this these operations into consideration here, what are the best case and the worst case scenario? Is there a risk of Operation Epic Fury not being so epic and, you know, roaring lion running out of breath? You know, what are the scenarios in your take? You know, Josh, you want to kick that off?
So historically, if you think about, I just remember this, so I apologize for throwing something new. You know, you look at the post-Iraq war the first time, like in 2003, that was the start of like a sort of a bull market. That was the second Iraq war. The first Iraq war, you had sort of a similar response in your early 90s where it's actually an opportunity to buy. You know, where do I see this? It depends on what the outcome is, because this is a lot more uncertainty with a lot more risk. If this turns pear-shaped, as you say. But that being said, I don't think this is recessionary. In fact, I actually think this is positive. And again, referring to what happened in 2003, I think it's going to create a more diversified S&P as we see this rotation sort of continue, which I think in the long term is better for stocks. The thing that makes me the most nervous, because again, there's a lot of uncertainty. I mean, there's just tremendous uncertainty. Does oil go to 100? Does oil go back to 60? I mean, it's so open-ended, which is why the vol is where it is. You know, the one thing I can kind of relate to is that the geopolitical risk is increasing, and it's increasing every day. And if geopolitical risk increases, that's not usually good for stocks longer term. That being said, I think Europe has more geopolitical risk than the U.S. because it's dependent on others for energy. And I think that's something to pay attention to. And, you know, I don't see Europe, you know, getting back into the energy production game anytime soon. And so I think that needs to be looked at. And what I mean by that is if we get sort of a recovery and vol sort of tampers down again, and you're continue to be concerned about geopolitical risk, I think it probably makes more sense to hedge that with Europe than with US. So if you're like thinking about that as sort of the way to do things, that can happen. I can tell you like Eurovol typically trades a little bit below US, but in this case, it's gone significantly higher. And so if you have an opportunity set to think about what you want, you're nervous, you know, it's probably good to think about Europe as your geopolitical hedge because of its energy risk, quite frankly, which is just, I'm shocked at what has happened with NatGas in Europe. So it just shows that there's a lot more uncertainty, therefore a lot more risk to Europe's economy with energy spikes. That's it.
Mike, what do you think?
Well, you know, just to add on to a couple of comments here. I mean, I think one thing that we saw during Ukraine and we're sort of seeing right now is effectively sort of among developed markets, what level of energy vulnerability? You go back to the 1970s when we had oil price shocks. Of course, the U.S. was massively energy vulnerable. Now, of course, today we're neutral, you know, maybe slightly positive as an exporter of hydrocarbons there. So that energy, you know, I know some people don't like this phrase, but in certain respects, relative to the euro and the yen, we are kind of a quasi petro currency, meaning the U.S. dollar is, right, just simply because we have less energy vulnerability there. And I think that's sort of, you know, magnifying. So if this oil, you know, to Josh's pear shape, you know, we get oil above 100 and stays above 100 for 3 months type of scenario, I think it's going to, you know, it's really going to magnify even more these energy vulnerabilities, and that's going to play out through equities and currencies. It's also going to create a bigger problem. So, you know, it's funny, within the FX world, there's been a spotlight on the U.S. as being, you know, sort of more the marginal dove, at least probably the marginal dove. We don't know how worse it's going to behave, and inflation was getting better, you know, getting, you know, a little bit softer there, and Europe was going to be a little bit more the marginal hawk, right? So now that is a little bit all upside down, because we now have Europe has got to it's now the ECB which has the harder problem, because they've got to, look at this, this energy spike, which is going to hurt many parts of their economy and create inflation too. So how do they then address that? Their job is now a lot more difficult than it was last week. And so does that mean that the euro has a major move to 110 or whatnot? So I think that's one of the things to watch for. And lastly, I just would say the yen is, interestingly, hasn't weakened too much, nor has the Nikkei. And so if we have a higher energy spike, that could be an interesting thing to watch there.
Yeah, I mean, Europe has a bit of a higher risk of stagflation is really what scares us. So,
Send it there, guys. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Josh. You can find them on Bloomberg, LinkedIn, and their respective website, www.talbotandcapital.com and www.passaicpartners.com. Thank you for joining us today. And remember, we'll keep an eye on what matters in the markets.
this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not investment advice. The information, opinions, and views expressed on this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended as investment advice. The opinions expressed may not align with Passaic Partners' views or its client strategies. Market forecasts are speculative and should not be the sole basis for investment decisions. Consult your financial and tax advisors before making any investments.